The Sunday Morning Linux Review is a weekly podcast with three hosts, Tony Bemis, Matt Enders, and Mary Tomich. They talk about Linux and open source subjects ranging from kernel updates, newly released Linux distros, Linux reviews, and tech news of the week. There are also special segments including Mary's Quiz Show, Is It Alive? They broadcast live on Google On Air, Audio Stream, and chat on IRC. For details, please visit the website www.smlr.us.
Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Russ, K5TUX, coming at you with another episode of Linux in the Ham Shack, this one being number 116. And joining me, as he has for quite a while now, is Pete, V2XPL. So, how is Pete this fine evening?
Good evening. That's my little ode to Halloween there. We'll stop that right away. How you doing, everybody? Pete, V2XPL, in the beautiful metropolis of Montreal tonight, where the leaves are falling off the trees and it's getting quite cold and humid. So typical end of October weather. And yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to Halloween, which is next week for those of you who are in the live studio audience. And for those of you who are listening by podcast, well, Halloween was recently, and I hope you had fun.
That was it?
Yep. That's my spiel.
All right. That's your spiel and you're sticking to it.
That's the end of the show. Not all.
All right. Well, we should probably jump right in here because I'm kind of curious with the weekend brushes with fame. Or is that me? Is that what I'm supposed to be talking
about? It's a trap. That's my bad imitation of Colonel Admiral Akbar. It's a trap. Just as good as Sheldon did it. I heard you had a brush with fame and I wanted to hear about it.
Well, it actually wasn't much of a brush with fame, really. We went to see it.
Come on.
No, it truly wasn't. It was far less of a brush with fame than I had hoped, as a matter of fact. We went to see Pollen Storm, which I'm not sure if any of our audience will be really cognizant of Pollen Storm, but if they aren't, they used to be in an a cappella music group called Da Vinci's Notebook. Now they've sort of gone out on their own and they're becoming independently popular through YouTube and various other venues. They show up at PAX East and PAX West and Comic-Con and, you know, that sort of thing from time to time. But we've known them for a long time now and we decided to go see them over the weekend in Dallas. And they're doing a lot of stuff with Will Wheaton of, Wesley fame from Star Trek TNG and some other stuff. He was even in a movie back a while ago called Stand By Me, if anyone else ever saw that.
A while ago, oh my God.
Yeah, well.
That was more than a while ago. He was like, you know, what, 9 in that movie?
Yeah, something like that. And anyway, so if you know who Will Wheaton is, Pollen Storm and Will Wheaton have been touring parts of the country doing a little thing where he sort of does stand-up recitations of stories kind of as a voice actor and kind of like a Garrison Keillor sort of thing that he does. And Pollen Storm do their usual musical hilarity. And so we got to see them for the first time. We got to sort of meet Will Wheaton, although he was in... We waited till the end of the line because we wanted to talk to Pollen Storm for a while, so we did that. And by the time we got to meet Will Wheaton, we snapped a photo with him and shook his hand. And then he said, "Oh, I've got some friends in the green room, so I got to bail." And he took off, and that was it.
Well, that's why it says brushes with fame, I guess.
That's right. Yeah, a very pencil thin brush with fame there.
Well, what can you do? At least you got to meet Will. And did you when he left? Did you scream, "Damn you, Will Wheaton"?
No, unfortunately, because we had a 6.5 hour drive and a whirlwind meetup with some other friends before the show, and we were all pretty frazzled by the end of the evening. So, you know, our interaction with Will was very brief, and things like witty retorts were not coming to mind at the time. So, unfortunately, none of that really happened.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
But anyway, well,
that's
we got
pretty
to
cool.
Yeah, we got to meet Will Wheaton, and I've got a picture of it on my phone, which will be uploaded to Facebook here pretty soon. So if anyone gives a crap about that, there you go.
Yeah, well, any fans of Big Bang Theory, you know, there's kind of a cult following now, I think. I don't know how many Twitter followers he has, but I know it's more than me.
Yeah, he probably has one or two more than me, too.
I have none because I don't even have a Twitter account anymore.
Well, see, there you go. See, you're doing things properly. I have a Twitter account that I really never use, except to announce when the show is going to air.
Well, there you go. That's all right. You don't like tweet the occasional thing to our fans, you know, making peanut butter toast. Yummy.
No, I probably should do that, but I used to do that a lot more. I mean, if I go look at my account, I think I've sent like 1,200 tweets or something since I've been on Twitter. Ooh. But it's been a while since I've really indulged in any twittering.
Well, you know, all in good time.
Yeah.
Tweet on, good people.
Right. And meanwhile, back at the program, we actually have some content for tonight. So why don't you go ahead and hit me up with some?
All right. You want me to start?
Yeah.
The first one was yours.
Well, that's okay. You can start.
Okay.
I'll make you go and do it blind. Since you jumped me about Will Wheaton, you go ahead and do this one.
Yeah, fair is fair, eh?
Right.
Well, all right. Well, I'm happy to announce that our good friend Peter, OK2CQR of CQR Log fame and HamQTH author, wants our feedback. He wants our help. So as I said, he's asking folks to use HamQTH. Please keep their profiles updated. He'd like us to upload a picture if you can or if you'd like. And he'd also like to know what users think and what they'd like to see in the way of future site improvements and features that they'd like to see. So let Peter know by using the contact form on his website, hamqth.com/contact.php. Just go to hamqth. You'll find the link. And yeah, it's a very, very good service. I'm actually happy to announce that after reading tonight's show notes, I actually went on the HamQTH, which I had not been on in a long time, and registered for the site because I used to just kind of visit it here and there just occasionally. But after reading this, I figured I'd register, and I uploaded my picture. So if you guys want to see what I look like, hi. You guys can go check it out. So hamqth.com, really good reference. And we're back.
Yes. No, it is a particularly good reference, and I like it especially because it has a free API. So if you're a programmer type person and you want to use call sign lookups in your application, all you have to do is be a registered member of HamQTH, and he lets you use unlimited access to the API for free. Totally.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that. Excellent.
And you do not have to be registered to use HamQTH, which is a great call sign, great and fast, I will say, and clean interface for call sign lookups. Unlike a certain, you know, other website,
I noticed how fast. I mean, I've noticed over the years how slow QRZ's gotten. I'm a pretty patient guy, and I still go onto QRZ to get some of the ham radio news that I, you know, they have some pretty good links and still check the forums on occasionally. I've been on for a long time, I guess. But I was amazed at how fast this service is. It's pretty much instant considering how big the database is. You know, we're talking a worldwide database, not just US. So pretty impressive. Whatever they're doing, they're certainly doing it right.
Yeah, and Peter's been a longtime listener of the show and giving us feedback on all kinds of things. So if you are wanting to do call sign lookups and are kind of tired of the way QRZ.com works, then I highly recommend that you go over and check out HamQTH.com. I use it. I use their API, and even just for regular call sign lookups. As a matter of fact, I don't know. I better check here to see if Gnorman is in the chat room, and he's not. I actually have I programmed a Python script for our channel bot where you can do a .qrz in the IRC chat when Gnorman is actually connected, which I will fix here shortly. And when you do that, it actually uses the HamQTH API to go out and do the call sign lookup and report back to you right from the IRC chat. So very cool stuff, and very, you know, totally free, embracing free software philosophy. And Peter's just a great guy. So use the software. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Peter, for keeping us in the loop.
Absolutely. So I'm going to let you go ahead and do the next story while I fix Gnorman.
All right. Good luck with that. Is it like Humpty Dumpty? He fell off the wall and cracked?
He does that from time to time, actually. You caught me with my mouth full. See what I'm trying to do here?
Apologies. We got to, you know, tell me these things in advance. I can't see you. We're not on the video feed yet.
No, that's
so,
true.
All right. Search for vanity call signs, y'all, for all you guys who are looking for a vanity call sign and are wondering if you'll get it. Now there is a search application available. You can search for available call signs, maybe a valuable resource for some of you who are looking for a decent vanity want to know if it's available. So you just have to go to www.radioqth.net/vanity/available.aspx, or just go to radioqth.net and follow the links, and you can check out if your vanity call sign is available. That way you don't have to waste your precious time and ink sending stuff back and forth to I was going to say the ARRL, but I guess it's the FCC. Apologies for that. Speaking of the FCC, I read a little story about these guys are going to reopen now, because I didn't realize the FCC was closed because of the government shutdown that my good friends in the U.S. got to experience recently. And when they reopened, there was a story on one of the news services that say that anybody who has dealings with them to be very, very patient, because they're going to have many, many a backlog due to that closure. So I thought I'd mention that as well.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that. It should have been obvious if I thought about it, but I didn't realize it until I saw this story that I got, that they were, you know, shut down because of the government shutdown. I guess they're back in operation now, but I'm probably severely backlogged. And if it wasn't completely obvious at the beginning of this story, it should be noted that this search for vanity call signs is U.S.-centric. It only works if you're under the umbrella of the FCC. So, if you have vanity call signs in Canada or Vietnam or South Africa, don't use the site, because it will not work for you.
Yeah, actually, Harrison made a good point. We were having a little Skype chat before, and he mentioned that all of our call signs are pretty much vanity, because when we apply for call signs here in Canada, we get to put three choices. We can go into the database via RAC.ca, which is Radio Amateurs of Canada, and you can check if a call sign's available, or directly on Industry Canada's website, and you can pick three of them, and they'll go in order. If the first one's available, they'll give it to you. If not, they'll go to your second choice. So you can sort of get a vanity call sign, but it's not exactly a vanity call sign. It's whatever call sign is in the database that's available. So when I got mine, I wanted something with a PL in it, Papa Lima, because my name is Pete Landry. So I thought it was, you know, somewhat appropriate. And lacking imagination, I figured that was the most easy and logical choice. And I threw the X-ray in front, because I've always been a fan of the letter X in call signs, because I find that X-ray, when you say it, it just comes across really good, and it's just one of those cool letters. You know, it's everywhere. You know, the movie Triple X. I don't mean the porn movies, but you know, the action movie with, I think it was Ving Rhames. Anyways, you kind of find X's, you know, the Xbox. Anyways, I'm just a big fan of the X marks the spot. There's another one. So I wanted an X in my call sign. Long story short, I got my first choice, which was Victor Echo 2 X-ray Papa Lima. So the X actually means nothing. I just like X's, and the PL is for Pete Landry. So there's my little little explanation of how it works here.
All right. And it's funny that you chose X, or you managed to get X in that case, because, you know, in that show that not Tim Taylor, that's his fake name. What's his real name? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes. Oh, goodness. Now I have a...
yeah.
It's horrible. I can't remember his name.
Anyway, it's Tim something. Anyway, they chose XTT for him, because the X means X, as in EX. So
Tim
maybe
Allen.
Someday, there, yeah, that's it, Tim Allen. So I guess you're the EX, Pete Landry.
I read that story. I thought that was pretty cool. The X Tim Taylor. I thought that was kind of there you go. And somebody threw it into the chat room way before I found it, but I just wasn't paying attention. So. Thanks a lot to K5WMA for throwing that in. I'll have to glance over there a little bit more often, I guess.
Yeah, that's where all the actual information comes from, not from us. I don't know why anybody's listening to this show, because it's, you know, we get all our information from the chat room. See, it's our little secret you know, pool.
Well, it's all, you know, ham radio and Linux. They're community efforts. So you gotta have a community, to raise the child, I guess.
That's right.
The child.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you go ahead and talk about Ubuntu, because I've sort of sworn off Ubuntu as of about 3 years ago, but some folks still use it. There may be one or two out there who occasionally use Ubuntu, you know, when necessary. So I guess Shuttleworth is already talking about 14.04, which is the next LTS release, not due to come out until April of 2014. And even though 13.10 only came out a few days ago, really, Shuttleworth is already talking about the next release. So what's he talking about?
I know it's pretty crazy, but it's also good to look forward. You know, you gotta look forward to something, I guess. But Ubuntu 13.10 Saucy Salamander was released October 17th, if I'm not mistaken. That's what my notes say. And they're already looking to, I have no idea how this works. How do they go from 13.10 to 14.04? I mean, unless it's already developed, but anyhow.
No, you don't get that?
No, I really don't. Could you explain it? Could we go on a tangent? Could you explain that to me?
Sure, I can explain it in 5 seconds. The 10 and the 4 refer to the month that it's released. 10 is October, 4 is April. It's always April and October.
Really?
Really.
Isn't that amazing? See, because I always thought when you're giving version numbers, I guess there's many ways to do it, but if you're giving version numbers to your software, don't you start with, like, you know, version 0.001 is your first try, and, you know, 0.2, 0.3, and so on. And then when you get a decent beta, you go 1 point something. And then when it works, you go 2 point something. And if you get it in 2.0, that means you've gotten it in 2 tries. I don't know.
Right. Unless you're Shuttleworth, in which case you don't necessarily believe in, you know, a certain base 10 chronology. I mean, it's literally based on the year. The 13 is the year, 2013, right. And the 10 is the month. So
I look at it, I feel like an idiot, because it's pretty obvious.
Sorry that I had to explain that to you, but there you go.
That's okay. Maybe I doubt it, but maybe I'm not the only one who didn't get that. So who knows? No, I actually had no idea. But it does make sense when you look at it. So anyhow, but I digressed yet again. So Shuttleworth is looking forward to the next version, 14.04, which will be released in 2014. The month of 04. Anyhow, the version will be called Trusty Tar. I think it's pronounced Tar, T-A-H-R. For those who are wondering, because I was and had to look it up, a tar is a large Asian ungulate resembling a wild goat. And they're actually quite furry. They look like teeny tiny gnus, actually, almost, which is kind of funny, considering, you know, there's a whole lot of gnu in Linux. But anyhow, I digress yet again. Let's see. What are the? There's going to be certain changes. It's going to be, like Russ said, the next long-term release. Shuttleworth says it's performance, refinement, and maintainability. Aren't those pretty words? But one of Unity's main features is the dash. The dash, for those who don't know, as I did not, allows the user to quickly search for information, both locally, so basically installed applications, recent files, bookmarks, etc. And you can also do it remotely, so Twitter, Google Docs, etc. The dash achieves this by having one or more what's called lenses, and each of these lenses are responsible for providing one category of search results for the dash. So the user basically may search, I've lost my place in my notes, where am I? User can search a lens either through the dash home screen, which is called the global search, or through the lens's own page in the dash by clicking on the lens icon in the lens bar. So one of the biggest changes in 13.10 was the addition of smart scopes, which were originally intended to debut in the previous version, 13.04, in the dash. So these greatly extended the range, precision, and relevance of searches initiated from the dash query box. Search filtering is divided into categories and sources. When a search term is typed into the dash, initially categories and sources are selected automatically, but choices can be further refined by clicking on the individual filter buttons within these groups. A security and privacy setting, access via system settings, allows you to switch off online switch off online search results if required. That's hard to say. Allows you to switch off online search results. I got this from linuxtoday.org. You can go right to Ubuntu's website and find much of the same information. But yeah, there's still a lot of people who use Ubuntu. I mean, every time I mention Linux to somebody who's much newer than I am, and like I say almost every episode, I still consider myself to be somewhat of a newbie. But every time I'm preaching Linux, everybody's like, oh, I've heard of that, or I've tried Ubuntu. You know, the name Ubuntu comes up over and over and over again. So whether you like it or you don't, it's out there. A lot of people use it. I tried it. That's actually one of the first versions that I installed was Ubuntu or Ubuntu, in case Richard's listening there. I don't want to get lynched. Ubuntu, I think, is how we're supposed to pronounce it. Again, I prefer Mint to Ubuntu. They're, you know, Mint is basically what was the catchphrase. Ubuntu done right, I think, is what they were saying it was called. Or was their motto or slogan or whatever. But I just find it's a little bit slicker. I just find Ubuntu to be a bit clunky. It just doesn't look, I don't know, I don't find it as pretty. It does what I need it to do. Although I think some of the dependencies weren't all put together, if I recall. There are certain things that worked right out of the box in Mint that didn't necessarily in Ubuntu. But then again, I haven't played with the distribution of Ubuntu probably in 2 years. So things may have changed. I'm not sure. Back to you, Russ.
Well, did you touch on the final bullet points about it being an LTS and all that?
Yeah, you said it at the beginning, and I also reiterated it while you had your mouth full.
Okay.
It's the next LTS.
That's right. Of course it is. Every 2 years in April, they put out an LTS version. And
no, it's only 2 years. That's not very long term, is it?
Well, it's supported for 5, but they they come out every 2, just to make things confusing. And Shuttleworth said about this particular version, 14.04, the next LTS, that he is focusing on, and this is a direct quote, performance, refinement, and maintainability. I really do hope they focus on performance, because that's one of the things that's been going steadily downhill in the Ubuntu realm. Unity seems to be at the forefront of the reason for that decline in performance. And since I'm not particularly a fan of Ubuntu anymore, I do run it on a couple of machines because I use the Zimbra collaboration suite, which I'm trying to remember who they're owned by now. The thing gets traded off like dirty underwear. It was created by somebody, and then I think it went to Oracle maybe, and then to VMware, or no, it was like Yahoo and then VMware, and now it's somebody else, and I don't remember who off the top of my head. But anyway, It's a great collaboration suite, and if you run your own mail servers, you might want to consider it. They have a free community edition, which is worth looking at. But unfortunately, they are really only supported under like Red Hat Enterprise Linux and Ubuntu. So if you want to run it, you got to run one of those distributions. And obviously, I'm not about to buy Red Hat Enterprise Linux. I could use CentOS, of course. But I'm not as familiar with it as I am Debian-based distributions, so I run Ubuntu for that purpose and that purpose alone. But for those who are fans of Unity, you know, hopefully this next version of Ubuntu will be faster and more reliable and better all around. And if
better,
it isn't, then
stronger and faster.
Right. If it's not, then I don't know. Tough. So anyway.
Yeah, well, that being said, you know, there's still people who like it and use it, so it's good to talk about it.
Yep, absolutely. And there's some more Ubuntu news since you keep throwing Ubuntu at me, so I'm going to let you.
I know. Well, there's all kinds of news. I run into, like, I could have filled a whole other Etherpad. It's crazy the amount of news I ran into. It's very busy both on the Linux side and on the ham radio side, and I'll touch on a few points in ham radio stuff a little later on, too, you know, just in one-minute increments. This is some interesting things going on. But I just thought this one was interesting because I didn't even realize Ubuntu or Ubuntu 13.10 for smartphones, which they call Ubuntu Touch. And basically for Androids, They say it's a complete desktop with a full range of desktop applications, so including stuff like your office suite, web browsing, email, of course, media, text messaging, etc. All your personal information, contacts, calendars, stuff like photo galleries, all your music can be accessed both from the phone and from the desktop interface. I thought that was really fascinating. They claim that SMS texts arrive on your desktop if you're docked when they show up. Calls are handled like VoIP if you want to stay working while you're chatting, stuff like Skype, etc. Of course, your phone needs to be needs to have docking capability and hardware that supports HDMI and USB. But basically, most of the standard high-end models of devices, you know, support that stuff anyway, so it's not really a big deal. What I couldn't find in the article was how do you install this? Because obviously, you're not going to burn an ISO and stick the CD in your phone. So I wasn't sure how that worked, never having done it myself. But I thought it was kind of cool because you just have your smartphone. You plug it into your docking station. You get a keyboard and a monitor. Basically, your phone can become your computer using this Ubuntu Touch. So I thought that was pretty fancy and worth a mention.
It is kind of interesting, and I know there's been a lot of discussion about whether Ubuntu for Android devices would ever actually materialize, and it certainly looks like it has or will shortly. With the overall power of cell phones these days, I mean, they really are capable of being a desktop machine. Of course, they just sort of lack the input devices, hence the need for docking stations. But it's kind of interesting. I sort of wish somebody other than Ubuntu would develop a desktop environment for cell phones, because then I might be inclined to try it. You know, for those people who don't have a particular aversion to Ubuntu like I do, this is probably a really cool thing.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's just a start. Like, maybe they'll get a Mint or a CentOS Touch next. Who knows, you know? I just thought it was very cool. You know, you drag your phone around, you get to the office, you plug it in, and you basically it can run whatever you want. You know, nice large display, things fits in your pocket. I mean, how cool is that? Come on.
Absolutely.
It's pretty damn cool.
That's right. It is damn cool.
So speaking of which, I just moved one of my bullet points up from the next segment, because we're talking about devices. I, Pete, VE2XPL, am in the market for a new phone, because my six-year-old Sony Ericsson flip phone basically just turns itself off whenever it feels like now. So I figured wouldn't it be a luxury, and I have about a billion points with the company that I'm with, because I've been with them for so long. So I'm in the market to get a new smartphone. I'm most likely looking at an Android, not really somewhat ethically, philosophically, I guess, just because of the open source concept. So I'm wondering if any of y'all out there have any comments or concerns, or not concerns, or have any suggestions that you'd like to throw my way. I'm happy to hear what your experiences are in terms of what you guys have. HKW throws in the Nexus 4. I've kind of read about that one. I was actually kind of going towards the Galaxy S3 or S4. I've heard a lot about those, and they seem to do a lot of the stuff that I'd like them to do. So if anybody wants to shoot me an email, feel free to do so. I'm happy to take your suggestions, and not having had a smartphone, not sure which ones are kind of, you know, some are more fragile, some might have crappy, you know, who knows, something. So, yeah, shoot me an email.
I wish I could sort of give you advice on that, but honestly, my experience with mobile devices is limited to the Galaxy S3, the Galaxy S4, which I don't actually own, a friend of mine owns, and the iPhone 4, as opposed to the iPhone 5, which I've never actually touched one. So hopefully someone will have some reasonable advice for you, because I have none.
That's okay. Everybody seems to have either the Nexus, the Galaxy, or the iPhone. They seem to be like the top three right now that I'm seeing everywhere anyways. Everybody's got an iPhone just because it's an iPhone, I guess, and people don't know any better. But everybody seems to be relatively happy with the phones that they have. What I liked about the Galaxies is that their battery life on standby is like a week. It's ridiculous. I can hardly get like 3 days out of my flip phone. Here's my flip phone flipping for those who don't believe me. So I have my little crappy flip phone.
Trust me, they may be 3 days when the battery is new, but that doesn't last.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. See, that's the kind of feedback I'm looking for.
Yeah, Cheryl and I both have Galaxy S3s, and we've had them now for probably about a year each, maybe a little more. Yeah, battery life has gone straight into the crapper.
The S3 has a user-changeable battery, however.
It does, and that is one of the good points of it, as opposed to an iPhone, which does not have a user-changeable battery. And the batteries are relatively inexpensive for the Galaxy devices, so if you are concerned about battery life, you can always have a spare handy when you buy one. And you know, when your battery does decide that it's not going to hold a charge anymore, it's very easy to get a replacement for it. So
yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm not that important, so I'll be all right.
All right. So the first bit of music for this evening is yours, so go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, this one's called the soundtrack of our summer. The band is called The League. I ran across them via Jamendo. The band is from Paris, France. Again, looking for some Quebec content and came across something. Well, at least it's a French band, so we'll go with that. The album is called also called The Soundtrack of Our Summer. Like I said, courtesy of Jamendo. You guys enjoy.
Summer as we go straight into fall.
Yeah, I know. I got to work on my theme, but hey.
That's okay. Nothing about this show is relevant, so we don't have to worry about the music either. Oh, look, a train.
Train.
Yeah, you probably can't hear it. If I kicked off my noise gate, you would hear the train going by. But we don't need to talk about trains. We need to talk about the Savannah Project.
Indeed. I also ran into this quite by accident this week, and I thought it was quite interesting. For our friends who are developers or who want to become developers, the Savannah Project, you guys can check them out at savannah.gnu.org. I'm in the wrong space. Excuse me very much while I restructure the Etherpad to get into the right spot. So the Savannah is the GNU project's answer to GitHub. You guys may know what GitHub is. The Savannah Project is a source code repository Like its well-known brethren, provides software developers with a space on the web where you can go to develop, maintain, distribute all of your software program and programming. It's built on top of technologies that are, they say, 100% committed to free software principle, including the GNU operating system and Savan, a web-based code repository hosting system. They claim that they have over 60,000 registered users, so that's nothing to sneeze at. And right now they're hosting more than 3,500 free software projects, including 434 official GNU projects. Some of the features that you'll see, they offer a full complement of features which they claim are designed to help developers build their program and grow their user base. So some of these include, all the standards. Code hosting, of course. There was no code hosting, I guess it wouldn't really be a free software repository, would it? You could have your choice of any of six popular revision control systems. So those be Git, Subversion, Arch, Bazaar, Mercurial, and CVS. There's a dedicated web page for your projects with a download area. There's mirrors, of course, available on that web page. Got bug tracking, code review system, mailing lists, shell service, and much more. They say that why should you choose the Savannah project over its competitors? Well, the biggest reason they claim is because their rigorous code review process, which ensures that the software in the repos is in fact free. So they make sure you can't just kind of claim that it's free and sneak in there. So the Savannah-based project enjoys a high level of trust in the community, they claim. I haven't heard of them, so we'll just have to take their word for it. But I was on the website. It seems pretty legit. They got a pretty fancy website there. You guys should check it out. So another good reason that there's no, other good reasons that you should use it, is that there's no advertisement, so you don't find yourself in the awkward position of having proprietary competitors being advertised on your project. So finally, because of the relatively small size of the repository, Savannah is able to provide faster response times to support requests. So if you're building or thinking of building a software application, if you're committed to software freedom, of course, free is in freedom, consider hosting your project on Savannah. They'd be glad to have you. So you can go to, savannah.gnu.org, and you could find the links to the hosting request form. So I wasn't really familiar with this. I think that any addition to repositories is good, especially if they're promoting free and open source stuff. So I'm not sure if you knew about it, Russ.
I did not know about it, and you spoke to its legitimacy, which is kind of interesting because it's actually hosted as a subdomain of GNU.org. So presumably it's as legitimate as the Free Software Foundation, where it is located. Was there something in the description I didn't notice? If I know that a lot of the software packages are, they're hosted there because they have the same philosophical views, i.e. they're GPL licensed or something like that. But was it included in the description whether it had to be GPL or licensed in a way that was compatible with the Free Software Foundation and the GNU project, or can anybody host it there regardless? Did you happen to see that?
I did not. The only thing that they mentioned in the article that I read was that they're committed to free software principles, so whatever their free software principles are. And they mentioned, including GNU operating systems. So I would suppose that anything that that is encompassed in that philosophy is what they would embrace, but I couldn't find anything. Not that I tried very hard. I only read the one article, but I didn't see anything in that one article.
Yeah, and it's an interesting project. I'm not sure that we necessarily need another GitHub or Gitorious or, a place to hold revision controlled software, because there's plenty of them out there. But my guess is that if you're a stickler for free software, like, Stallman level free software, you have that level of passion about free software, that you might want to host your project at this particular site instead of Gitorious or or GitHub or some of the other places that don't necessarily care about the licensing and the ethics of free software, that clearly this site will. So, it may be an option for that. And I've noticed that we've talked a lot about, sites and software and stuff for developers, and I'm not sure we really need to talk about developers. I'd be interesting to, I mean, I know we have developers that listen to him. I mean, Ted, who's in the chat room every week, or every other week rather, is a free software developer who develops free software for ham radio and Linux. And we know several others who are also listeners to the show, but I'd be interested to know how many people, just sort of, if anyone really, other than the people we know about, develop free software for ham radio, and would be interested in, you know, in letting us know and talk about their projects, because you know, while this isn't particularly useful for everyone, there's probably projects out there that we don't know about that are, that may be going unrecognized or underrecognized, that we could talk about and let everybody know about, because that'd be kind of interesting to find out. I think
I'm sure there are. I mean, I don't think that we'd probably know about everyone, you know, about all the major ones, but how many little applications might there be out there, you know, that people are using for their specific applications, needs, or interests? And, you know, maybe, 10 people use it, 20, 100, who knows, but it's a big planet. So yeah, there's got to be a lot of stuff out there. And how do you find out about all this stuff? The internet is so vast now that, you know, any hits that you get in any search engine is going to be the more popular stuff. It's kind of like finding indie music. You know, you got to go to the clubs to find it, because it's just not promoted, because it's not commanded by the big corporations. So, it'd be interesting. I'd be interested to know that too.
One of the other things that the Savannah Project brings to the table, at least their documentation seems to indicate this is one of their favorite parts of the Savannah Project, is the Savain software, or the Savan, I guess you would pronounce it, software that is the basis for the hosting that they do, which also includes what they consider a better and more reliable bug tracker than the other sites like Gatorius and GitHub, which makes for a better user experience, I kind of gather. I assume this is for the developers who are interacting with the people who are downloading and maintaining the software, not interaction between the developers and the GNU project. So it's always nice if you have a better way to keep track of the problems with your software, and if there's an easy way to interact with the developers to get things fixed, that's always a plus when it comes to developing software. So if this is truly better, and we're only going from the documentation they've provided to us, then that is a good thing. And for anybody who is a fan of GPL and GNU software and the free software philosophy and the other licenses that go along with that, they may want to consider moving their projects from one of these other sites. The ability to use the various versioning systems too, instead of being, you know, locked into using Git or Subversion or something like that, if you happen to use one of these other things, that might make it easier to embrace as well. So it's an interesting project, and maybe someone will get some use out of it.
Yeah, and if nothing else, well, GNU has another feather in its hat, and it's a good way for them to get their name out there, you know, even if it's within a community that already knows it. Like, but who knows? Yeah, it's. I thought it was interesting. We got a comment from WA0ERR who mentions you said you wanted to look at small ham radio projects or people who are developing their own software, and he mentions that we could look at radio.linux.org.au for starters. So I've clicked on that, and we'll be checking that out. So thanks a lot for that.
Yeah, and as it happens, I personally have looked at that site. We looked at that. Cheryl, I think, was actually the one who dug that one up when we started doing stuff or wanting to have some paper copies of something to hand out when we went to Linux shows or to Hamvention, stuff like that. We wanted something to actually give to people. We actually took a subsection of that list and printed it out to give to folks who came up to the Linux and the Ham Shack booth at the various events we've been to, because that is an incredibly comprehensive list of ham radio software for Linux. We were only able to include a very small part of it on a single sheet of paper to give people, but it is an excellent resource if you're looking for ham radio software of any kind. I would recommend going to radio.linux.org.au and checking out that list. It's enormous.
I'm just on the website now. It's amazing. It's yeah. Like they have everything. It's right. Crazy.
Yeah, it's a huge list. And like I said, we did give that out when we were going to shows and stuff like that. And then presumably if we go to shows in the future, we will continue to give that out. But truly a great resource. And thanks to Ted for mentioning it again so we can remind everybody that it's out there.
Well, very good. I'm going to just trying to copy and paste it into the Etherpad, not realizing that I copied on one computer and I'm trying to do a control V on the other.
Now, please just copy the link, not the entire list.
No, just the link. Okay. No worries. I'll put that in. Make sure that's in the show notes, and I've definitely bookmarked that one for myself too.
Excellent. Yeah, so good bit of information there. And check out the Savannah Project, savannah.gnu.org. That's Savannah like the city in Georgia, Savannah, for anyone who's interested in that. And, of course, it'll all be in the show notes, so you can check those out as well.
That's right, Harrison. It's going to be in the show notes.
That's right, Harrison. Harrison, like, Harrison, wake
like
up.
Just like the pick on Harrison. Yeah, that's
all right. I saw this. I didn't get a chance to check out this link, but it sounds really cool. So go ahead and tell us about this video that you found about the ISS, because it seems really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. This was sent to me by one of my friends, somebody, Dennis, K1LGQ, who lives in New Hampshire in the USA, who I don't believe is a listener of the podcast, despite the fact that I told him about it at LobsterCon last summer. But that being said, Dennis is a really good guy, and he sent me this link about the space station. I'm a, you know, like many other ham radio enthusiasts, I have many other hobbies, and one of them happens to be space exploration, which I partake in myself, of course, naturally. But there's a video on YouTube. I'll put the link in the show notes. You guys could do a search for it yourself. If you go to YouTube, you can search for Departing Space Station Commander Provides Tour of Orbital Laboratory. And basically, this is Sunita Williams, who was commander of the International Space Station recently. And in her final days as a commander, she recorded an extensive tour of the Orbital Laboratory. And she downlinked the video to NASA, and it's now on YouTube. She did that last November 18th was the download date. And just before she, with cosmonaut Yuri Malachenko and flight engineer Aki Hoshide, who's from the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, right before they departed in their Soyuz spacecraft before leaving the space station and heading to Kazakhstan. So this tour is 25 minutes long. It's a somewhat lengthy video, but it's really interesting, and it includes scenes from every one of the station's module research facilities, all the way into the bathroom. I mean, they even explain that. And Williams provides a running narrative of the work that's taken place aboard the orbit outpost. So really, really good video. I watched the whole thing. When I, usually when people send me YouTube videos, if they're more than 30 seconds, I usually don't pay attention. I have a short attention span, ADHD. So when I saw this thing was 25 minutes, I'm like, I'll give it a minute or two, my time is precious. I like to make myself believe. But I ended up watching the whole thing. I mean, it's just amazing. If you're into the whole, if you follow NASA and their adventures, really, really interesting video. So like I said, YouTube search, Departing Space Station Commander Provides Tour of Orbital Lab, if you guys are interested. And the link will be in the show notes. But definitely worthwhile 25 minutes if anybody's interested in the workings of the space station.
Yeah, that's very cool. I'm going to probably have to check that out, being that I've started watching a lot of stuff on YouTube. So that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, it is, and you'll actually learn stuff. It's like I said, it's really, really cool.
Oh, good. I'm going to get an edumacation.
An edumacation, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, well, it's apparently a sad day for Small Wonder Labs and the Rock Mite for those people who are QRPers and kit builders. A long-standing site out there on the internet that sold great QRP kits is closing its doors, but it's not all bad. So go ahead and tell us what's going on.
Yeah, I ran across this one via, I can't remember where I went across this one. This was probably from the Amateur Radio Newsline, if I'm not mistaken, the latest version. QRP kit sellers, Small Wonder Labs, which many of you know, many of you who are a ham radio enthusiast, are closing their doors permanently. According to Dave Benson, who is the owner, Dave Benson, K1SWL, is going into retirement, and he's discontinued sales of the popular Rock Mite. A Rock Mite, for those who don't know, is a small QRP, or QRP is a low power transmitter kit that you build yourself. And basically, it's just this little teeny tiny transmitter. You could stick it in your pocket, go hiking, and you know, you get to the top of the mountain, and you haven't carried your 40-pound Kenwood with you. So, good way to do some QRP operation from remote locations. So, these things have been around forever. Small Wonder Labs have been around for a long time, and Dave Benson, very, very well known in the ham radio community. So, he says on the website that he'll ship out the last dozen orders shortly. And then he will certainly continue to support requests for missing or replacement parts from existing customers, but only over the short term. He also hopes to keep Small Wonder Labs website active for about a year, and he'll maintain documentation for his earlier products during that time. So, however, it says a QRP enthusiast should not despair. According to the rumor mill, at least one other QRP kit supplier is interested in taking over supplying the Rock Mites. And there could be an announcement anytime soon. And I was trying to figure out who this could be, and I really have no idea. And the thing that came into mind is the Tuna Tin 2 people, the New England QRP Club and Company. They've been out there for a long time, and but I have no idea. This is just it's the only thing that came to mind for me. So basically, you can check out Dave Benson's future plans. You can visit smallwonderlabs.com for the next year or so, and all the updates will be kept there. So, yeah, it's sad news, but maybe not. We'll see. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
I guess we will. And I'm not real familiar with Small Wonder Labs. I don't really do a lot of kit building or QRP work, so this is not kind of my bag, but I know a lot of people out there are into both of those things and are probably going to be disappointed to see them sort of close up, but maybe there's hope on the horizon. Maybe the Tuna Tin people or some of the other folks, some other folks might take up that mantle and continue to produce the Rock Mite QRP kit. So hopefully it will continue.
Yeah, there's other outfits out there. You know, you guys can just look up ham radio kits, and there's certainly no missing supplies. These guys have, you know, they're just, you know, relatively well known. So any time that something in the ham radio sphere goes defunct. Closes. It's just kind of it's just a little sad, you know, because you know there's less and less ham radio operators. It's just I don't know. I just thought I'd mention it. I'm not gonna cry or nothing. I'll be fine.
That's okay, because I saw something today and I didn't have time to do enough research on it, but we can touch on it in the next episode where apparently the tinfoil hat folks, the preppers, are you familiar with
you saw that too?
Yeah.
I was going to talk about that, but there's so much other stuff. I'm like, oh, we'll wait.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, little teaser for next episode. We're going to talk about preppers and their affinity for ham radio. It should be fun to talk about. So,
indeed.
All right, so we both saw that. We'll touch on it next time. But for that, I think we're done with our main topics, and I'm going to go ahead and do a little bit of music, and then we'll wrap this bad boy up. So for my selection for the evening, and yes, I actually found one for this episode.
Woohoo!
Yeah. This is a band called The Sons of Sin. I came across this one on Jamendo. They're a band out of the UK. And this is a kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of a grungy, metal-y, not as speed metal as some of the other ones I usually pick, but it's a very good track. I enjoyed it a lot. It's called Whore of Babylon. So we'll listen to this one. We'll come back on the other side. We'll talk about some of our listeners and other things. I'm not even sure we have any feedback, but we'll talk about something when we come back, and we'll wrap up the show. So here's Sons of Sin with Whore of Babylon. Like that song better the second time I heard it, so that's a good one. I like that. Gonna have to go in the archive.
Sons of Sin.
Yes, the Sons of Sin.
So reminds me of Sons of Freedom. I've been watching the Sons of Freedom lately. I recently discovered that series, and I'm actually don't mind it. It's actually pretty good.
Sons of Freedom. I'm not sure I'm familiar with that one.
I'm sorry. I keep doing that.
Sons of Anarchy?
Sons of Anarchy. Yeah. Sons of Freedom is a Canadian band from the 90s, and they're actually really, really good. They're an indie band. And then every time I talk about Sons of Anarchy, I mention Sons of Freedom because I was a huge fan of this band back then. And people just look at me and go, "What? What are you talking about?" Just like you just did, basically.
You know, that motorcycle show, The Sons of Freedom.
Anyhow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it turns out that I don't have any feedback. So did you get any feedback that I don't know about?
No, I did not, actually. Feedback was quiet this week, aside from the comments that we have in the text box tonight that we tried to share with everyone. Nope.
All right. And I have been pushing episodes out. I've only got one more to get out, which will come out in the next couple of days. And then I'm all caught up. So I'm so happy to be sort of back on schedule. It's amazing. So
yeah, I was pretty impressed. I got to listen to a couple of episodes this week.
I know. And you've already listened to them because you were kind of there.
Well, no, but I mean, I like to listen to them again to hear what I actually said, see if it made sense.
Yeah, I like to do the same thing. I think I listen to every episode about 5 times before it's all over with.
You edit them too, so I mean, you have to listen to them a lot. Once they're edited and posted, I download it and I listen to it, and you know, just plus it kind of gives me ideas of what to follow up when I forgot to take notes. So.
Yeah, well, it speaks to my combination of narcissism and megalomania, so I do listen quite a bit. That being said, we should probably plow through our social media roundup, get to our subscribers, and why don't we mention the folks in the chat room, because there's a few of them in there.
Well, that's feed. We got, you know, social media is a form of feedback, so we do have feedback, just not in the form of email, but anyhow, go ahead.
That's true, and no voicemail either. Voicemail, people, call the number. You'll be hearing it here in a few minutes as we do the outro. So who's in the chat room? Well, we've got AK4WQ. We've got Babylon Lurker, B. Finch, EI7IG, Elkaset, Guard Zero, who I happen to know is AE5CP, Hard Olaf, Jay Lindsay, who hasn't said a word tonight, so I don't think he's actually there. Mintcast Rob, who I know is buried deep in bed, probably in down in Houston where he's from. We've got Symbola, Harrison, Ted, and you're in here. Amazing.
I am.
Yes. That being all of the folks who are with us tonight, and I don't know how many people are actually listening to the live stream who aren't in the chat, but I'm sure there are a few. So for everybody who's in chatting with us and listening live, thank you. And you can do that next time when we record, because all that information is on the website, and you'll be hearing more about that later as well. But we've got some new followers out there on the interwebs. Via the social media sites, and we don't have any new folks I'm aware of via Facebook, at least not that I saw, but we do have a couple new folks who are following us via Google Plus. We have Felix R, and we have Peter N, who are following us via the Google Plus, and we also have a new follower over on Twitter. His handle is @TheZeroCool. Name of Dennis. So we want to thank Dennis for following us over on Twitter.
Yeah, I like that one. The Zero Cool. That's cool.
It is cool. And we've also had some new subscribers to the mailing list. We have Adrian, 2 Echo 0 Sierra Delta Romeo, 2E0 SDR. Wonder if he's into SDR at all.
I don't know. That's what I was wondering.
I suspect he probably is. He's got a website, www.2e0sdr.com, where you can check out Adrian and see what he is up to.
He's also got dxkits.com, too, is also his. So you guys can check that out as well.
Yeah, and go do that. Go do that.
Go do that now. Go. Yeah. He's from England, by the way.
No. Wait till the end of the show, then go do it.
Well, people can multitask. They're listening, just like I'm doing right now. I'm talking and surfing the net, looking at Adrian's website.
If you're listening to us while you're driving, do not surf the web.
Or text.
Exactly.
Very important. Very important.
Another new mailing list subscriber is Rusty, November Mike 1 Kilo, NM1K. Thanks, Rusty. And we also have 80-0-BM, Alpha Delta Zero Bravo Mike. That would be Robert H. I read that wrong, didn't I?
No, that's right.
Oh, it is right.
I just messed up the bullet points.
But oh, yeah, okay.
80-0-BM is Robert H. from Iowa, who registered on the website. So thanks for being there, guys.
Yeah, excellent. And yes, it was Pete's fault. So
take all the blame.
Yes. no casual donations since the last episode, but that is fine because we have some subscribers. We have actually many subscribers, but several who re-upped for this current month are Bill A., Bill H., Gary U., Jeremy H., Scott P., and Robert H. Oh, and also David L. I was kind of trying to separate them between monthly and yearly, but that didn't work out so well. So anyway, those are some subscribers whose dues came in just recently. So thank you to our subscribers and to everyone who subscribes to the show. I do believe I've got a couple of new subscribers that I need to add Etherpad access to. I will get to that very shortly. So if you haven't got your notification that you have access to the Etherpad, you will be getting that in the next day or so. So I want to thank everybody who listens to the show, whether they listen to it live or ex post facto or contributes via, you know, IRC or Google Plus or any of the social media networks, and especially those folks who send us a couple of bucks every month by way of subscription. We do this show, you know, basically out of our own pockets, and we would continue to do so whether we got subscriptions or not, but we really appreciate everybody who takes a couple of bucks out of their pocket and sends it our way to help defray some of our hosting costs and other expenses.
I'm going to do that soon. I'm going to join because I figure I keep bugging people every second weeks to become a member, and I'm not a member, so I'm going to be a member, and then I'll be I'll be ethically correct in asking for money.
I see. I'm not sure that's required, but if you want to go for it, go for it.
I'd be happy to. I just haven't gotten around to it yet because I'm lazy.
Well, you do actually contribute to the show in ways that most people cannot. So
a little bit, I figure, but, you know, it's all good.
Yeah, so don't necessarily feel
it. $20 a year goes a long way for what you get, and it's more than reasonable. It's kind of like I always tell the people at our complete tangent, but local radio club, it's $20 a month to join our local radio club. And I'm quite active in our local radio club, but I always told everybody in the club, even if I was not active in the club at all, I would still pay the $20 membership to the club because I get use of the repeater. $20 a year to have use to a local repeater, I find, is more than reasonable, as I also find a subscription to the LHS podcast website and, you know, support and all that. So, yes, I do. I just, like I said, personally would feel more comfortable asking people for money if I had done that first myself.
All right. Well, we will let you do that. It's sort of the same way.
I'm sure you will.
I'm sure, yeah.
$20 a month. No, sorry. I said $20. Harrison's caught me there in the chat room. Not $20 a month. $2 a month or $20 a year.
I did the same thing for my old radio club because they did so much for me when I lived there. And, of course, it went to provide access and to the repeater and maintenance and all of the things. And it also went to support some expenses for field day and stuff like that. So I paid my dues for that club long after I moved away from that area. But I also recently, within the last couple of years, started hosting and maintaining their website, and I do all the work for that. So they apparently had a club meeting at which they voted to not allow me to pay dues anymore and instead gave me free dues in exchange for doing all the hosting. So
absolutely, I understand. And plug that club, why don't you?
I will do that. That is the Aroostook Amateur Radio Association, the AARA. They're up there in Aroostook County, Maine. Not actually terribly far from Montreal. I think it's about a 6-hour drive, give or take, from Montreal, so just over the border.
In a straight line, if I have to go around. So when I go to Presque Isle, it's actually about 8 hours, 8.5.
Well, you must go the long way then, because I got to Montreal a hell of a lot faster than that.
Yeah, probably.
So anyway,
I drive an RV, it's slower.
Well, there is that too. So anyway, yeah, they were, you know, did a lot for me, and I did a lot for them and still do. They just don't allow me to pay dues anymore. And if you're interested in that club in particular, or just want to check out the website that I maintain, you can find them at Kilo One Foxtrot Sierra, K1FS.org. So, and that's that. Yes, excellent. You know, I gotta like keep my eye focused on where that button is on the soundboard so I can actually hit it. You know, with when it comes up.
A big
up.
Red one, like the one from Office Depot. There, the easy button.
That's right, the easy button. Yeah, unfortunately. Well, I could probably use an Arduino and rig myself one up. That'd be kind of interesting.
That'd be an interesting project to talk about. We could do a whole show on that.
Yeah, we could. But not tonight. That's so anyway, true. I think we're about done unless you've got anything else you want to add before I kick the music off and we start the outro.
No, not really. Well, it was a very, very busy week in ham radio. And some of the things that caught my eye really, really quick was ham radio has been quite active this week in emergency response. So earthquakes in the Philippines. The Philippines was hit by an earthquake last October 14th. And just a few days before that, there was a cyclone in India. So on the various news services, they mentioned the help of ham radio operators in emergency response in both those scenarios. So I thought that was very noteworthy. But yeah, there was a lot of news this week. 30th anniversary of ham radio in space via AMSAT, which is also quite exciting. And yeah, that's the last two I wanted to mention. So
and,
that's it.
And you did so. Excellent. All right. So I think we've done all the plugging we can do in segment 3 of episode number 116. So I'm going to hit the little button that plays some music, and Pete's going to lead us on out of here. Sound good to you?
Sounds good to me.
It would sound good to me too if I didn't have it muted. So here we go.
Good segue.
That's
good segue.
Right. Yeah, excellent. Way to screw things up as usual. So, and I'm speaking to myself, not to you. So here we go.
Okay. I don't take it personally. All right. I'd like to thank everyone for being there tonight. Of course, as we just mentioned, thanks to all of our monthly and yearly subscribers. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks to all of our listeners, live and quasi-live. We couldn't do it without you guys either, for sure. Everybody, please check out our website, lhspodcast.info. You could reach us via email at info@lhspodcast.info. That comes to both me and Russ. Leave us a voicemail, please. We certainly don't get enough voicemail traffic, and that's always a lot of fun. 1-909-LHS-SHOW or 1-909-547-7469. All hate mail, this is the new one, all hate mail can go to Harrison, ve2hkw@gmail.com. You can send it to us too. We'll take it as well. Subscribe to the mailing list. The link's on the website. You can certainly go to Cafe Press and Printfection. Buy some of our show merchandise. Every purchase you do helps the show out a little bit. And every little bit helps, and we very much appreciate it. Definitely listen to us live every other Tuesday, 8 p.m. Central. That'd be Wednesday, 0200 UTC. And the recording schedule's on the website. My name's Pete, Victor Echo 2 X-Ray, Papa Lima, in beautiful Montreal, wishing you guys a great fortnight, as they would say on another podcast. Thanks for being there.
All right, and this is Russ, K5TUX, coming to you live from between the peaks in the pine forest of north central Arkansas. And if you don't know how to get in contact with me now, you probably never will. But I'll go ahead and tell you that K5TUX at lhspodcast.info will work. You can look for me on all of the social media networks out there, or, well, actually most of them, at J.R. Woodman. And I'm also K5TUX over at 73s.org, which is a site we haven't mentioned in a long time. So Pete gave you all the other methods for getting in contact with us. And thanks so much for being a listener to the show. We'll catch you all in a couple of weeks' time with episode number 117. And we look forward to talking with you all then. Goodbye.
Night, everyone.
More fun shooting guns in the house.